Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. One of our great warriors, both in the literal sense and the substantive sense, in the fight for the protection of our country against enemies, well, both foreign and domestic, is, I'm very proud to say, a guest for the full hour of this edition of Securing America. His name is Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired, a man who served with distinction as a special operator in the United States Army, as well as subsequent to his departure from the Army with his retirement, as a very senior civilian in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, which involved cyber security policy, international affairs, and brought him into contact both in that position and through subsequent assignments with much of the rest of the U.S. military and national security establishment, including a stint at the National Security Council. John has gone on to a number of other things. He's worked in the defense contracting space. He is these days, I'm pleased to say, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy, and is the author of a brand new book, which will be the focus of our conversation today, entitled The Nation Will Follow. We're anxious to hear more about the book and to talk about other things that are on John's mind and should be on ours as well. And for that purpose, let me say, welcome, John Mills. It's good to have you back on board. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, Frank. Thank you so much. Always an honor to be with you.
Well, the privilege is ours, sir. So you've described yourself as kind of a modern-day Whitaker Chambers, having spent time in the belly of the beast, I think it's fair to say, in our government. Remind us who Whitaker Chambers was, for starters, John, and why you think that is the kind of model for where you have found yourself in recent days, at least.
Well, thank you, Frank. Whitaker Chambers, some may not remember the name. If they are have been subject to the Howard Zinn model of teaching American history, they probably look at Whitaker Chambers as some asterisk of a villain of the Red Scare. That is exactly the opposite of truth. Whitaker Chambers was a communist in the 1930s who experienced a salvation, came to Christ, and realized he had been hanging around the wrong folks, and in the late 40s began outing them, including Alger Hiss. Now, again, Howard Zinn would let everybody know that Alger Hiss was, you know, a victim. No, he was a communist. And actually, when Clinton received the NSA Venona intercept tapes, well, guess what? Validated, yes. Alger Hiss was a communist. So Whitaker did a great service, and his model—
Not just a communist, but a highly placed communist agent exercising influence in the State Department, among other things, at the founding of the United Nations, no?
Absolutely. So Alger Hiss was one of a number of Soviet agents inside of our U.S. government. So there is precedent for what's going on in today's world. But the model of Whitaker Chambers and his book Witness is what inspired me to write The Nation Will Follow at thenationwillfollow.com, because I realized that I was a modern day Whitaker Chambers. And I, after 35 years of facing the outward threat, I realized the country was essentially being taken from within, internally behind my back. And I felt I needed to say something. So it's about my time. being in a number of very key and critical events, and my 4-year journey to getting this information in front of the John Durham investigation, the U.S. Attorney for Connecticut, who's leading the investigation into Spygate, Russiagate, the coup against Trump. So, and I had to
special prosecutor,
and mm-hmm. and he is has a history of being tenacious. Legal issues are always a long, slow grind. Mm-hmm. Victory is not easy. It is never easy. And you have to, it's a battle of steel wills. Who is willing to go through this long, hard grind? That's the price of victory.
And in your role as somebody who had been inside, for want of a better term, the belly of the beast, you were able to witness, as you say, firsthand, some of the things that were being done by what's been called the deep state, the administrative state, the permanent bureaucracy, and in particular, what it was doing to subvert the elected president of the United States, Donald Trump. No?
Yeah, absolutely. And a very well-known lawyer had asked me to put together a complete chronology of events. So it took me a while to write this, but the more you write, the more you realize and more you are triggered over time by other events. So this went back to events during the Obama days, back to 2010, and then their internal hysteria over the Tea Party movement as they went to the midterms, and then the election of the first term, and then they went to the re-election event. And their overdrive to out internals who were not compliant with their ideology. Mm-hmm. So I realized that, especially by spring of 2016, I was right in the middle of something that was going on. And early 2016 is in very, very sensitive top level meetings, all these tee-hee, Russia is playing with our election again, Russia and China. Most of it's really China. Mm-hmm. And so some very sensitive. Now, I was gently escorted out of one of the most sensitive groups, the Cyber Response Group, which I had helped put together several years earlier to address the hardest of the cyber penetrations of the U.S. government networks. So the Cyber Response Group perhaps is the entity that was leading the unmasking, but then it went on and I realized, you know, in October,
leading the unmasking of who, John?
Well, the unmasking of, a lot of them were Trump officials. So in, when you're having intercepts of various means, I'm not going to go into methods or, normally a U.S. citizen is supposed to be masked, not revealed, unless right. there is a FISA process of a FISA court, which is the court that essentially addresses these matters. It's very secretive.
But just to be clear, John, these are surveillance operations that are conducted against foreign targets in which American citizens might be caught up simply because, for example, they're on a phone call with a yes. foreign national. And their identity is supposed to be masked, is the technical term for it. And what you're saying is you found yourself in the middle of the governmental mechanism that was actually unmasking those American citizens, making their identities known to government officials for purposes that might prove to be quite problematic.
Yes. I will name one name is Susan Rice, who was fluttering around. There are others that I don't reveal.
Now the domestic policy director at the White House under President Biden.
Yes, very dangerous. And see, when you're at that kind of position, you can't be subpoenaed by Congress because you're not Senate confirmed and you're considered immediate White House staff. So there was that.
She was at the time the national security advisor, right?
Yes. And national security advisors are normally not subpoenable.
John Mills, hold the thought. We're going to come right back with more with Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired author of The Nation, will follow right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Liz Cheney's electoral rejection as the sole representative in the U.S. House of the people of Wyoming shows that a condition known as Trump derangement syndrome, which she has increasingly manifested, can be politically fatal. For those of us who've worked in the past with Representative Cheney and her similarly afflicted father, this transformation has been appalling. Their stated determination to do whatever is necessary to destroy Donald Trump has given the appearance of bipartisan cover to one of the greatest travesties in congressional history, the Stalin-esque January 6th committee. It has become a personal vendetta that encourages his unequal treatment under law. Alas, we are likely to see Liz Cheney exemplify the warning about the fury of a woman scorned. Wyoming voters' repudiation makes clear, however, that henceforth she is playing full-time for the other team. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back, and a special welcome once again to our guest for this full hour. His name is Lieutenant Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired. He is a man of many parts, including an awful lot of experience, both in uniform and as a civilian official of the Office of the Secretary of Defense. And John, I hated to interrupt you there, but we had to break. Come back now with us to a very important insight you had into the deep state that came about as a result of a serendipitous, I guess, encounter in London, of all places.
Yes, Frank, a senior retired law enforcement official who I knew very well and had spent a number of hours and days in meetings at the White House, the National Security Council. Well, he was on a flight to London with me. I turned around, there he was. There was also a retired lieutenant general that I knew very well. So it's amazing what you see on a flight to London. So, but this retired law enforcement official, a few nights later, surprise again, was at a small group dinner with me. And in a very bombastic and unusual, atypical manner, gave a presentation in front of a number of people, a meltdown that he was going to prove that Trump was a Russian asset. This is 30 days before the election. And to remind everybody, the Russia story wasn't really a story in early October of 2016. So this just theatric presentation, really, even though most of the people in the room were globalists and elites, were frankly just confused and, well, Hillary's going to beat Trump like a drum anyway. So what? And what is this Russia thing? I mean, but the only thing, if you look back, and again, the senior lawyer had asked me to put together a complete chronology, is that person was in London to coordinate story. This person was a personal friend of Jim Comey and was there to coordinate the story with Gina Haspel. And
Gina Haspel, that name rings a bell. Remind us who she was at the time and what she subsequently became.
Well, in her official biography released by the CIA, she was, it's actually an ambiguous statement, but she was chief of station of in London, which is one of the most critical CIA station chiefs, because that is a UK, like it or not, is our most trusted partner. And we have incredible...
Especially on intelligence matters.
The Five Eyes, and they are the closest of the close. And it's, and I was there on a Five Eyes coordination meeting for what's called information sharing. So this retired official, personal friend of Jim Comey, and the only thing that makes sense, because it is documented that Comey gave the green light to accelerate Crossfire Hurricane, as an insurance policy against a Trump win,
and he was Crossfire Hurricane once again.
That was the FBI effort to identify Trump as a Russian asset. Okay. So which has really been totally discredited. It is shameful. It's a black stain upon the record of the FBI, and we still need truth on it.
One of a number, unfortunately, at the moment. But John, just to connect the dots here, Gina Haspel was coordinating on this operation against a then candidate for the presidency, Donald Trump. What did she subsequently become after Donald Trump actually, despite all of this, won the election of 2016?
Well, she was a deep stater who became what's called the DCI, the Director of Central Intelligence, one of the 18 intelligence agencies under the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence. Now, having lived this world for a number of years, I mean, it's one of those things everybody kind of, you know, has a little bit of a chuckle, because the DCI by line and block is supposed to report to the Director of National Intelligence. You know, they kind of do their own thing when they want to do it and what they want to do. That's really the reality.
So it was a very important position, a position of trust. And the question is whether that trust was seriously misplaced. But we're going to run out of time before we run out of things to talk with you about. So flash forward to how all of these insights and experiences, your Whitaker Chambers, epiphany, brought you to present information about what you saw in the course of your work inside the deep state to the attention of Special Prosecutor John Durham.
Well, a few days after the election, I was called on the top secret phone and urged that I was critical that I participate in putting together an intel community assessment on establishing Trump as a Russian asset. And the excited voice on the other end said, and hopefully we can delay or block the inauguration of Donald Trump. Okay, that's pretty explosive and incendiary. I'm not sure it's ever been done before in post-World War II American history. So I realized I was part of the team that put together the intel community assessment. And in the process, it comes back to the department for official chop and approval by the Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter. When it came back to me, the document that I had worked on, I had to look through it and say, I had to non-concur with my own document because there was no evidence. There was nothing in the document, in the top secret document, that said Trump is a Russian asset. The executive summary up front said, Trump's a Russian asset. Look through the document. My recommendation to Ash Carter, non-concur. And I was told, John, discontinue staffing. Don't have to worry about it. Ash Carter is already signed because, and this is the critical part, Comey and Brennan are personally hands-on keyboard writing the document. That never happens.
In other words, a document that was going to make this clearly political charge was being personally written by the man who was at the time the director of the FBI and the man who was at the time the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, respectively, Comey and Brennan. And you're saying that this was part of an effort, essentially, to get Donald Trump to thwart him from becoming president of the United States in the run-up to his inauguration?
Yeah, this is insanity, total insanity. And this is what essentially has launched a non-shooting civil war in America. We are in a state of war in America. Wars and struggles have many forms, but this is what led me to write the book, The Nation Will Follow, thenationwillfollow.com, is I wanted it to tell as an insider my story and all, and I'm officially signed up as a whistleblower. I'm officially documented as a whistleblower. And I wanted everybody to know this story. I wanted to encourage other whistleblowers inside the federal government right now. And I wanted to give the American citizen hope and an action plan. So this book is in many ways an action plan on citizens on how to fight the deep state. And their focus should be about 97% on their own county. The American governance and election process begins and essentially ends with the county. If it's dirty at the county, it's not going to get cleaner as it goes up the chain.
Yeah. John, I know you've got a 7-point plan to accomplish this impact at the county level. We have to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to go through that in detail with you because I think it's really a how-to book. I mean, we call this program an owner's manual. This is an operator's manual, you might say, for people who are concerned about election integrity, and we all should be, especially on the eve of as important an election as the one at hand, and how vital it is that people be eyes on what's going on in their county governments and how they can have an impact on them, which is a really indispensable contribution, I think, to the commonweal. We're very appreciative of you doing it in your book, The Nation Will Follow. And we'll talk on the other side of a very short commercial message with John Mills about how you can be actively involved in county government affairs in a way that will not only, I think, serve you and your fellow citizens of the county well, but also hopefully assure election integrity, which is critical, of course, to good governance in this republic of ours. We'll get into all of that and more with John Mills right after this.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, 5 Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, 5 Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are continuing our visit with John Mills, Colonel, United States Army, retired, author of The Nation Will Follow, personal memoir of his time inside what I call the belly of the beast, the deep state, the administrative state, call it what you will. It has been shown, I think, among other things, by John's personal testimony and a lot of other revelations over the past 4 years as having been instrumental in trying to undermine and ultimately destroy the presidency and the president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. John, you were talking about correctives that are available to us, elections obviously being the most important of them. But for elections to allow popular will to be expressed in a corrective fashion, obviously they have to be free and fair. Election integrity is something that I know you were really seized with after what we all experienced in the 2020 election. Talk about how you came to understand what needed to be done to assure that we had free and fair elections going forward.
Thank you, Frank. Well, it really started in 2019, so I wanted to give a plan in the nationwillfollow.com preface by Stephen K. Bannon. I wanted to give an action plan because I actually started in 2019 after the disastrous Virginia elections. And this is important because I just gave sworn testimony in Arizona on behalf of Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham in a federal hearing on elections. And that's one of the things the cross-examining attorneys tried to come after me was, oh, you just are worried about 2020. I said, no, actually, I began before that in 2019 because I wanted to understand in detail the election and governance process. And I realized for 35 years, I was facing outward and I didn't realize what was going on. And again, it's the county, the 3,300 counties or county equivalents. It's all about citizens making themselves heard. And because officials act very, very differently when they know they're being watched, they're being assessed, they're being graded, and they're being held accountable. Yes. I want everybody to be a Loudoun County parent, everyone. So that's,
and that is, of course, a reference to what happened as citizens of Loudoun County, which happens to be my home county in Virginia, found out what was being taught to their children and raised a ruckus in the school board meetings in the run-up, notably, to the last election of governor in the state of the Commonwealth
of Virginia. And the fists are still figuratively flying. And it is, and I'm very close contact with a lot of the Loudoun County leaders, Loudoun County Rebellion. This is ground zero of the movement to take back America. And again, everybody wants to get angry on social media. Everybody wants to shout about this or that in Washington, D.C. Folk, there, we got plenty of experts who are black belts, you, me, others, Steve Bannon, many incredible people, Charlie Kirk, Lieutenant General Flynn, many who can address the national. But the most important thing is for citizens, I say it over and over again, secure your county and the nation will follow. There are seven key personalities within every, it's common to all of the 3,300 or so county and county equivalents. And it's your, like you mentioned, your school board, your county council, your election board, your registrar, your sheriff, your prosecutors, and your judges. Those are the seven common key groups that are the foundation of governance, government, and the election process. They are constitutionally, that is the foundation of America. There's only about 30 counties in America that cause problems. But the cancer can and is spreading unless citizens get involved. And that's why I say any open mic session, show up and make your voice heard.
Yeah, and this is about accountability, as you say. John, one of the personalities, as you put it, is prosecuting attorneys. We've witnessed in recent years a very concerted effort being made by George Soros to elect certain prosecutors who clearly are at odds with the kind of good governance that you're talking about, law enforcement, obviously, most especially. Talk about that phenomenon and what it means in terms of the heightened necessity for the kind of civic engagement that you're calling for at the county level.
Well, the Soros, this is where we were looking the other direction. And years ago, Soros funded what we call Soros attorneys. Every county or county equivalent has essentially what's called, in Virginia, we call them a Commonwealth attorney. They are elected positions. Soros attorneys, district attorneys, whatever they are called, because there's different names for them. They are intentionally collapsing society and civilization, intentionally. And most recently, the Gascon in Los Angeles was able to defeat recall by their dastardly, outrageous rejection over 200,000 names off the recall roster. When in the election, They only, and because they're saying, well, these signatures don't match. I mean, it was over 25% of the signatures they said they don't match. but they wouldn't allow any independent third-party observers, any of the recall supporters. So this is, again, this is absolute totalitarianism. This is communism. This is thuggery. And so citizens of Los Angeles, don't give up. You got to try it again and again and again until you win. And just like in San Francisco, where they recalled the absolutely insane Soros attorney who was willfully collapsing civilization, you got to do that. You got to do that because these Soros attorneys are essentially, they're saying, you know, essentially anybody can do any crime under a certain level. I can walk into a Home Depot, Lowe's, walk out, as long as I don't steal more than $1,000 worth of equipment. Of things, nobody's going to do anything. This is collapsing civilization, and it's intentional.
It's the kind of broken windows theory on steroids. Broken windows being an idea that if you actually fix broken windows, you give the appearance of order in the society, and crime goes down, conditions improve. But John, there's a something called the precinct project or strategy. How does that relate to this, if at all? And is it enough for people simply to show up at these open meetings, or they can do more? Can they do more?
Oh, yeah. So the Precinct Project is a wonderful parallel project that is focused on the county political party. That's a separate issue. Everybody, there's a lot of people, and I've had to talk to the county GOP chairs. Now, I forced out two county GOP chairs in a row personally. And also I forced out my registrar personally. Her and I had a showdown. And guess what? She was the only perfect one in the room, and she's gone. So you've got to get involved, not just show up at the open mic. You have to read the state election code. And I have heard sophisticated lawyers and politicians say, well, I can't read the election code. Yeah, I have to have a lawyer to interpret it. No, that's absolute silliness. And I've caught lawyers over and over again trying to quote or interpret the state election code who don't have any idea what they're talking about. Totally grossly wrong. So citizens, it's your job to read the state codes on elections and other matters. The bond assurity process, which is what I'm working on to remove a number of officials. Everybody has essentially a public official at the county and the state level, appointed or elected, has essentially a bond, or sometimes it's called different things, but almost all of them have some form of bond. If that bond is challenged or pulled, guess what? They're ejected from office, at least temporarily, until the matters are resolved. So citizens,
John, that's a term I'm not familiar with. So what is the function of the bond, and how does that get instituted?
Well, just like a contractor has a bond to assure their duties and their obligations in a contract, it's essentially the same concept for a public official.
It's a financial insurance policy, I guess, in effect, is what you're saying?
That they will carry out their sworn perform duties. And so you can challenge those. And I'm creating a model here. Again, I forced out the GOP chairs are a different matter. And that's really where the precinct process comes into play.
Right.
But, you know, I just because of my gravitas, whatever you call it, forced out two in a row. And now we got but I also forced out the registrar. And her and I had a real throwdown, and I said, well, meet me in front of a judge next week. Pick the one. I've already checked the calendars. And her response was, she resigned. Okay. Citizens, it's your job to assertively, aggressively know the state codes. Don't think, well, it's a lawyer. I can't, that you have to be a lawyer. No, you don't. In fact, being a lawyer is better, because I've had lawyers also say, well, I can't.
Not being a lawyer is better.
Yeah. Not being a lawyer is actually a plus, because I've had very, very well-known lawyers who have clucked their tongue out. Well, I can't visit a prosecutor, a judge, or a sheriff and talk about these matters. I'll lose my license. And they've lost their license anyway.
There may well be cause for concern on that.
Yeah,
hey, John, I want to drill down on this idea of there are practical things you can do. Maybe if you can share with us on the other side of a short break what specifically you did to engineer the removal of this registrar, as an example. It's a model that I assume is written up in detail in your book, but let's get into, again, the action, 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 as our friend Steve Bannon likes to say, that can be taken at the county level that the nation will then follow. The title of John Mills' terrific new book, The Nation Will Follow. That and more. Straight ahead. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Liz Cheney's electoral rejection as the sole representative in the U.S. House of the people of Wyoming shows that a condition known as Trump derangement syndrome, which she has increasingly manifested, can be politically fatal. For those of us who have worked in the past with Representative Cheney and her similarly afflicted father, this transformation has been appalling. Their stated determination to do whatever is necessary to destroy Donald Trump has given the appearance of bipartisan cover to one of the greatest travesties in congressional history, the Stalin-esque January 6th committee. It has become a personal vendetta that encourages his unequal treatment under law. Alas, we are likely to see Liz Cheney exemplify the warning about the fury of a woman scorned. Wyoming voters' repudiation makes clear, however, that henceforth she is playing full-time for the other team. This is Frank Gaffney. We are continuing this hour-long conversation with the author of a very important new book, The Nation Will Follow. His name is Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired. Among other things, he is a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, of which I am very proud. John, I just wanted to impress upon our audience, in terms of this idea that there are things they can do beyond reading, you know, what are the laws, what are the relevant regulations to assure election integrity, taking on and removing from office individuals who are deviating from their responsibilities, whether it's through this action you've mentioned on their bonds or challenging them in court. Give us just a little bit more detail on how that can work and how mere mortals can do that sort of thing.
It's no more complicated. You must be informed. You must be a reasonable, rational citizen. You must know the state codes. And what's stunning in this, most of these officials are not reading the state codes and are just from memory saying, well, I'm doing it because of this. Check the code. It's amazing what happens when you read the code. Because oftentimes they are not in compliance with the state code on elections, but also many governance matters. Always know and know how to research your state code. It's mandatory. You must know that.
Do you have a problem with standing if you're a citizen of the county and you're citing the code and challenging these folks in court?
Well, good point. First of all, you should be a citizen of that county. It's best to have legal standing. Also, I was I've established enough gravitas that I was invited to speak and present to the Attorney General Meares's most of his senior staff in earlier this year in Virginia and talk to them about governance and election matters. So, and there's actually appears to have been an investigation started in Prince William County. And there's a number of other wonderful people that are also doing this in Prince William County, not just myself. There's a number who are doing this and doing a wonderful job. But you need to be passionate. You need to be resilient and you need to assertively. And so there's those seven groups I identified. Maybe that's too much to do all seven at the same time. Pick one or two of the seven that you most are interested in and start doing it and studying it and getting involved. Do an office call. Seek an office call with every one of those personalities or the ones you want to start with and just present yourself. It's amazing what happens. Most of these officials do not receive office call from their citizens, oftentimes, which are the ones who elected them. You have an absolute right to visit them. Get to know.
You have to be prepared, though. I think it's critically important. The other thing, John, is, and you kind of touched on it there a moment ago, if there's strength in numbers, if you actually have a coalition or a group of people who are like-minded, who have also done their homework or who are willing to provide mutual support, I think it's a given that you're going to have a more impressive impact on that individual, whatever role they're playing in their county government. If there is a sense that this isn't just one irate citizen, but there's a problem in their community. John, we could go on about this, but I just want to commend the book to our audience for more in this sort of how-to manual, how you can make an impact in your county. But I want to pivot to the point about the nation will follow. The nation at the moment is, as you know, John, as a very distinguished and valued member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, beset by threats external to this country as well, the most important of which I think by far is that of the Chinese Communist Party. You were a member of our Team B group that put together this really important book recently entitled The CCP is at War with America, which you can access for free as a downloadable PDF at ccpatwar.com. Give us just a quick appreciation, John, of how you, as a professional national security practitioner, especially with a lot of time in uniform, regard the threat we are facing today from the Chinese Communist Party and its so-called unrestricted warfare, the non-kinetic kind, and now perhaps increasingly the kinetic kind.
Well, the analogy is it's the wonderful situation where you are a single police officer trying to subdue two bad people simultaneously. The bad person one is the internal threat of those who are essentially want to collapse America, the communist Soros, deep staters, elite. So you're trying to wrestle them down, put handcuffs on them. At the same time, you have the immediate mortal danger of China to your left. So it's a wonderful situation as you have to take down both simultaneously. And that, guess what? We just have to be Churchillian and do this.
Wonderful. I mean, a little bit facetious, obviously, but you're saying that it's a challenging circumstance. And I couldn't agree with you more. We have to do both. Dealing with the Chinese communist threat, you have been at the forefront of the work our committee has done on trying to protect Taiwan, which is quite obviously in China's crosshairs. But John, I think you also agree with others on our team that the Chinese have made known their belief that their war ultimately is with us, not just Taiwan, and that when the balloon goes up, as they say, over Taiwan, it may well entail, in addition, attacks by the Chinese against American assets, personnel, and possibly even territory. You've written notably about Guam recently. Walk us through the scenario that worries you most in this regard. And actually, I'm going to ask you to hold the thought on it because we're just about up to a break and I don't want to truncate this. But to the extent that you can give us some guidance, both as to gravity of this problem and what we can do about it, given, well, frankly, the rather degraded state of the United States military at the moment. I contributed to a program that we've done on the hollowing out of our military by the Biden administration. These are really important topics, and I want to cover them with you on the other side of this short commercial message. John Mills, Colonel, United States Army retired and author of The Nation Will Follow, will join us for that topic and subject matter on the other side of this break. Here we go. Welcome back, and we are finishing up this conversation of a full hour. I hope that you will, if you're just joining us, take a look at what we've already covered with Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired, the author of an important new book, The Nation Will Follow. And John, I got right up against the stops, and I wasn't able to give you a chance to respond, but take some time now to walk us through how you see the Chinese Communist Party threat, not just to friends and allies in the region, but to us as well. And then we'll get into, are we positioned to do something about that threat?
Thank you, Frank. Well, all Americans need to realize that this showdown with China and the country named Taiwan, it's not about Taiwan, it's about us. So all Americans need to realize when the word Taiwan, the country of Taiwan is mentioned, it's really about us, because when China moves, and not if China moves, when China moves, they have to take out America. The real target is America. So don't look at this like, oh, that's just the Ukraine. That has nothing to do with us. We're just trying to live our life. No, ladies and gentlemen, everybody in America, this is an immediate mortal danger because China is after us, not Taiwan. And to move any kind of kinetically in a missile and explosion and gun invasion of Taiwan, they have to take out American territory of Guam, Tinian, Saipan, and Hawaii, because the American response will emanate from those. That is our territory. That is part of America. So every American needs to realize China is going to attack American territory for its first and immediate step of consuming and taking over Taiwan. They have to, because all of our response is going to come from these American territories and states. So, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this is about America.
Yeah, I think this is such an important point, John. So let's pivot quickly to the condition of the United States military to do something about this Chinese threat. As I mentioned in our webinar, we've talked about the grave threat to our military's esprit de corps, its unit cohesion, its readiness, arising from, to put it in the shorthand and vernacular, it's being wokeified by the Biden team, military leaders as well as civilians. What's the state of the military in the United States, John, and its readiness to deal with this Chinese threat?
Well, Frank, I've almost spent 40 years in national security in one way or another. I've never seen anything like it. My military that I dedicated so many years of my life to, there's a number of senior leaders who have become woke, meaning they took an oath to the Constitution, not to an ideology of the week. And they are just, it's back guano crazy on this topic. And so this is just wrong. We have wokeism among a number of our senior generals and admirals.
And when you use that term, John, do you mean it in the sense that others, including myself, have ascribed to it as really just sort of a Marxist?
It is a psycho-Marxist grievance and narcissism, which nothing good comes out of this. Nothing will ever get better. It'll only get worse. So you've got a leadership issue. You've had this war on the members of the military, the vaccine issue, indoctrination of critical race theory. And we've lost the operational art whether it comes to a shipbuilding plan, which the Navy can't, this goes back 7-8 years, the Navy can't establish and stick with a shipbuilding plan. The industrial base is an absolute mess. If we wanted to expand naval production right now in ships, we couldn't do it. There's nothing. They're at max capacity on both the U.S. the four U.S. government yards and then the private sector yards. They cannot increase capacity without a major recapitalization.
And so, we have supply chain dependencies on China, including for military batteries, among other things, that is just mind-boggling.
Batteries and pharmaceuticals that are a basic part of our war plans, guess where they come from?
China. John, I shared with you earlier today a memorandum that I just received from members of the United States military who are very concerned, particularly about these vaccine mandates and what they're being compelled to take into their bodies or be forced out of the military. You touched on this briefly a moment ago, but how serious a problem is this in terms of having able-bodied, highly trained, in many cases, combat-experienced leaders of our military units, in many cases, and others, compelled to leave the military over these vaccines?
Well, we already had a pilot shortage for years, and we're forcing a number of qualified pilots out of the service, so making it even worse. The Army is not even meeting its significantly under its 10 to 20,000, which is a significant number of recruitments. And I think much of the, and all the services are experiencing this. There's a wokeness is a major factor. I mean, I find it hard, and I know many, many examples of young people being forced out of the military because of just this wokeness standard closely related to the vaccine issue.
And ideological purge.
It's an ideological purge, and many who are not interested because of what they see and the craziness. Generals and admirals, you have taken an oath to the Constitution, not to an ideology. This ideology is destroying the uniformed services. Yes. And is it intentional at this point in time? There is no other intuitive conclusion other than it's intentional. So we have a fire in the main engine room.
And the danger couldn't be greater, given the appetites of the Chinese Communist Party for aggression and the perception that they can get away with it without real cost. John Mills, your book, The Nation Will Follow, is most important and welcome at this moment, and we thank you for sharing in detail much about it. We hope you'll come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same, and that you've benefited from this edition of Securing America, and hopefully are better prepared as a result to join us in protecting the country we love. And then I hope you will go forth and multiply.